news I gained just yesterday dismayed all that I learned. The emptiness of life examined. Time can't be.
Well, hello out there, and welcome to another episode of Things I Learned While Learning Other Things. This is an attempt by me, Joe Morahan, and my brother J.S. to provide you with a series of interesting, informative, educational, and yeah, we hope enjoyable stories that will help you navigate through those high seas of life. And we thank you for joining us today as we return to our third episode of a series that we've entitled Already Gone, The Story of Glenn Frey. And we've been discussing this man, this boy with a dream from Detroit of making it big on the music scene and in Los Angeles. And we've been discussing the, you know, this was all triggered by noting that the anniversary of his death, the death of Glenn Frey, will occur in May. And he will have been departed from us for 100 months. I mean, it was a great loss to music fans worldwide. He was recognized as a superstar, a superior talent, a singer-songwriter nonpareil, and one of the recognized leaders, along with Don Henley, and seen as the particular driver of one of rock and roll's greatest bands ever. And the numbers support that. And the Eagles, of which Frey was so protective and so proud, and of which he was so demanding in his leadership that he refused to allow the release of a single Eagles song that he believed fell beneath the incredibly high standards that the Eagles had established. And the Eagles' greatest hits album would become the highest selling album of the 20th century. Yes, the highest selling album of the 20th century. Now, unless the laws of quantum physics would somehow unweave our understanding of the dimensions of time, this is a sales record that can and will never be broken. It shall stand for all time. So I guess that young boy in Detroit watching Bob Seger do his thing, who went to LA, got lucky, worked hard, and his creative genius shone. Well, Glenn Frey, Don Henley, and the band they formed, the Eagles, no less a talent than music Bob Seger. He had seen it all coming, and he knew great things lay in the future for Glenn Frey, way, way before any of us had ever heard of the name Glenn Frey. And Seger had taken in the then 15-year-old Glenn Frey. He took him under his wing in his Detroit music studio and taught him the ropes. Let Frey enter the music industry's sausage factory, if you will, to observe just how great music got put together, how great music got made, step by step, layer by layer, by trial and error, by experimentation, to learn exactly just how it was that professional musicians of world-class talent do their thing, how true artists perform their magic. And Seger permitted Frey to enter this inner sanctorum and bear witness to the grinding, imposing, relentless, exhausting Sisyphean process by which hit songs were orchestrated, took form, and then were offered up to the world to be judged on their merits. And Seger later declared that, you know, for the record, if you will, if you'll allow me, that he was convinced early on that Glenn Frey was going to defy the odds and was destined to make it big in the music business because he had never met a more ambitious boy, a young man imbued with talent, but whom had such a powerful dream than was Glenn Frey in the entirety of his life. he had never seen a more ambitious person. And no less an authority than Glenn Frey's mother. She would say the same thing about her son. Well, that was her son, but still, she was right. And these were highly complimentary remarks because, as unlike the vast majority of wannabes, could have been, should have been, and but fors, Glenn Frey committed himself to the business of making great music. He went at it hard. He put his soul into it. He put himself in position to become a big time success. And he did it the same way as that decades old Smith Barney TV commercial spokesman once growled. He made his money and his fame. He made his money the old fashioned way. He had earned it. Well, yeah, he did. You know, imbued with talent and creativity, given his strong work ethic, he had guts and ambition. And Frey left Detroit for the LA music scene. And this was the center of the music universe at that time. And if one was going to make it in the music business, one went to Southern California, at that time. That's where the scene was in 1970. The Beach Boys, the Flying Burrito Brothers, Poco, the Birds, even America with its Ventura Highway and Horse with No Name. They were finding their way into the limelight from Southern Cal. And of course, Frey had some luck along the way, good luck along the way, because, and this should be expected, because everyone whom I have ever known, whom has had or experienced extraordinary success, has readily acknowledged that at some point in the course of the long run to success, in the long run of their career, they had been the beneficiary of good fortune, had been incredibly lucky. But yeah, they would also admit too that they had indeed first placed themselves in a position such that they might find that lucky break was coming their way. And then given that fortunate good break, unlike most, they went out and did something spectacular with it. Take Don Henley for a moment. Henley serendipitously had run into Kenny Rogers in Texas. He, Kenny Rogers of Kenny Rogers and the First Edition band, they had already been a popular household name, what with the release of Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town and Just Dropped In to See What Condition My Condition Was In. That Kenny Rogers, he had racked up huge sales figures. And Henley, not wanting to let this fortuitous interaction that might never again likely occur. He does not want this moment to pass. He demonstrating the confidence needed sometimes to get that lucky break, he walked up to Kenny Rogers and he said to him politely, by the way, "Mr. Rogers, I have this band and we're playing at this club tonight. I think you'll like our music. You should come see our show." Kenny Rogers later reported he could do nothing but sort of laugh, as he didn't do such things at this stage of his career. No, he was well beyond going to see some unknown band. But several hours later, he started appreciating Henley's chutzpah and just curious enough to see their show. He went to the club while Henley and his band were performing. And indeed, Rogers was sufficiently enough impressed. He saw Henley's potential such that he invited him to stay at his place in Southern California to make some connections, to hone his act. And Henley stayed 4 months. And it was there he met Glenn Frey. I mean, sure, it was a fortunate development that Frey ran into Henley, and likewise Henley crossed paths with Glenn Frey, but do you really believe for one second either one of these driven, outstanding musicians, these unbelievable talents, would have wasted time, even a single moment of their valuable time, with the other guy not seen to be a remarkable musician, an incredible talent on a mission with a dream, and with the guts and the drive to make it to the mountaintop. If you think so, then get over it, for it's not true. No, these were incredibly talented, and each knew the other man an extraordinary talent and sufficiently motivated to do all that would be required to make it big in the business. And they were in lockstep, destined to fame and fortune with each other via their fabulous talent, boundless ambition, and an incredible work ethic. Yeah, and those guts and big balls. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was their good fortune. And then they went out there and they worked their balls off. That's the deal. That's what it took. There were no shortcuts, no promises. As Nike, both the Greek goddess and Phil Knight's company, had commanded, just do it. You know, it's Karate Kids, Mr. Miyagi, he demanded the same thing, albeit in a more mysterious, more illusory fashion, all that wax on, wax off business. But in other words, you got to put in the time, do the work. And with all that work, there are still no assurances. But just maybe, you learn some things, and only then, maybe, like Phil Collins sang once, against all odds, one just might, after having put in all that work, make it into the limelight. Still, more often than not, one by one, the pursuers of the golden ring, the seekers of the Holy Grail, they flame out like a moth to the light. They crash and burn. And all one can know for sure in life is that without the commitment to do the hard work, there exists no possibility of potential payoff. None whatsoever. No rewards are assured. No promises are ever made of a return on all that investment. And hard landings, they're always a possibility. They are, and they always will be. That's life. Still, one must put in the time. Success doesn't appear in a New York minute. No, it does not. And by way of illustration, it's worth noting, take the Beatles. The Beatles, they played, this is astonishing, for a long, strenuous, just exhausting 29-month stint. A stretch of 29 months where they performed as often as 5 hours a night for practically nothing. They were honing their craft, deciding just who they were in front of drunken, often violent dock workers, sailors, and other loser misfit types in a sort of a lost last resort, if you will, at the Indra Club in Hamburg, Germany. That's where the Beatles spent 2.5 years, where more often than not, it looked like a scene from the Fight Club rather than a nightclub. Just another one of those nights, if you get my drift. Bar fights, beatings, knifings, all this to be borne so that one day, maybe, the band just might transform, maybe become, metamorphosis into the band that we know today that became known as the Beatles. This does not appear in any way, this violent scene in Hamburg to capture the existence or philosophy that marked the lives of, George Harrison, My Sweet Lord, Hare Krishna, John Lennon, Imagine, All the World Living in Peace, All I'm Saying is Give Peace a Chance, and Paul McCartney with She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah kind of stuff, Hey Jude, or Ringo Starr with Photograph, You Know It Don't Come Easy. The Hamburg scene just doesn't seem like it represents the aura of any of the Beatles, but they did what they had to do. They put in incredibly hard work, and they did what they had to do, and that is do the work, become the Beatles. And they too, after the thrill was gone, had earned it the old-fashioned way, hadn't they? Yeah, they did. And it really didn't come easy, did it? No. And consider this. What about Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and the Rolling Stones? Hadn't they traversed all over London's famous metaphor, Seven Bridges Roads, where they played too in front of all kinds of raucous, occasionally totally out of control, drunken patrons? You know the types. Think only of London's future football hooligans and the damage they can do, and you get the picture. The Stones were at rather lowbrow London clubs for years before they broke out to ultimately assume the mantle, you know, to become what they have become now for seven decades, the world's greatest touring rock and roll band ever. But you wouldn't have seen it in those lowbrow basement clubs in front of drunken hooligans. But you got to do the work. And as an aside, I just point this out, an early demo session in London, in a London studio, the Rolling Stones performed, and a noted music producer watching the performance opined early on that the Stones appeared to have some real commercial potential if only they'd get rid themselves of their untalented, very strange lead singer. This producer couldn't fathom the potential value of Mick Jagger, this new kid in town, if you will. Now, and who might blame him? Jagger certainly was not the second coming of Pavarotti, was he? No, he was an acquired taste, was Mick Jagger. But he was the one and only Mick Jagger. But let's stop here with a brief continuation of this point, this single point. Talent is not necessarily enough. Even supposed experts can fail to spot genius and commercial success. It happens. And but for the ego and confidence, and Fry and Henley, the Eagles might have been it might have been over almost before they even got started. No less an authority than Glyn Johns, the world-famous, renowned British producer who'd previously worked with Pete Townsend and The Who, The Stones themselves, Led Zeppelin, Eric Clapton, and The Beatles. He didn't get the Eagles. He did not get the Eagles. They told Johns that they were a rock band. He said he knew rock bands, and the Eagles weren't one of them. Whoa, Johns didn't understand Glenn Frey's dream, nor could he see Don Henley's vision coming true. But it happens. Decca Records passed on the Beatles in 1962, stating that the era of boy bands is over. Oh, but instead of caving in to Glyn Johns, Frey and Henley, they fired him. Well, or he agreed to just let them go, depending on who is, you know, who's telling the story. But the rest is simply history, isn't it? And with that history, in our next episode of Already Gone, Glenn Frey 4, we're going to mention briefly the roles, the fortuitous roles played by Jackson Browne and Linda Ronstadt and whom played with Frey and Henley and the early Eagles, and from whom Glenn Frey and Don Henley learned so much. And so we'll leave you here, you know, saying, as General MacArthur did, when he was escaping from the Japanese forces on the Philippines in World War II, you know, he so boldly, so egotistically had proclaimed, "I shall return." We too, well, we claim, but far more humbly, let us say, that we shall return. Hey, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed. Bye-bye.
crystal blue water surrounding me. Tap to the wind, taste the sea breeze. Tropical heaven on the coral sea. A little more rum, I think of my wife. What did I do? Have I ruined my life? Tell her I've changed, become a new man. I promise I will, and I know that I can. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? The sea is now boiling and I'm getting cold. I've lost my sails, got to find a way home. Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. Years from tomorrow, days from the land, nothing can save me unless fate lends a hand. Storm, it is worse than I know. The wind and the waves are taking their toll. I look to the stars, there's none I can see. I'm afraid fate, she has answered me. Only moments my story will end. And there was a story I wanted to send. Oh, how I dream for the calm of the sea. Face smiling back at me. The sea is boiling and I'm getting cold. I've lost my sails, got to find a way home. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life.